You're listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, episode 26. We are talking new faces in new places, standouts around the development camps, and catch up with Ryan Beach of Canucks Army, who is attending Canucks camp and gives his opinion on some of the Canucks prospects. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to episode 26 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and subscribe to our show on iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show. I'm with my co-host, Peter Harling, managing editor of dauberprospects.com. Peter, before we get to the show, we've got to mention our fearless leader, Daryl Dobbs. He just sent out an update on his condition.
Yeah, for anyone who's listening who hasn't heard the unfortunate news, Dauber's been diagnosed with a rare form of bone marrow cancer. So the good news is he's found a compatible donor, and that's really sped up his treatment. He's in the hospital as we speak, going through I'm sure what must be just an absolutely hellacious chemotherapy treatment that's going to be very unpleasant for him. But look at the silver lining in the situation as often as you can, and the fact that they're speeding this up, you know, hopefully means it'll be over sooner than later for him, and he can get the transplant, the stem cell transplant, and get himself on the road to recovery. And he mentioned something about by Christmas he might be feeling like better than he's felt in a long time. So not very religious, so I won't say thoughts and prayers, but we're thinking of you, Dobbs. Get through it.
Yeah, and if any of the listeners want to help, and I know there's a lot of people out there that are really wanting to help and want to know how to help, what he really wants people to do is go and donate. Canadians age 17 to 35 can start at the we're going to put a link on our show notes where you can go to donate, and that's what he's really wanting everybody to do, is go donate so the World Registry can grow immensely and really help out anybody else that's going through this and also needs bone marrow transplants. So the real way to help is to donate. All right, let's get into the show. Quick turn, but we're going to get back into the show. Free agency, Peter. Some guys that are on the move, and maybe some guys that have re-signed that we want to focus in on. Let's start with a goaltender, Cal Peterson, moving from Buffalo. He wanted out of Buffalo real bad. He ends up signing with LA. What do you think of Cal Peterson's chances now in Los Angeles?
All right, so not to be too much of a spoiler alert, but when I was in the draft, we'll have this interview on an upcoming episode soon. I had a chance to catch up with our old prospects writer Shang Peng, and I asked him about the goaltending depth in the Los Angeles Kings system, and he kind of made that "it's not good" sort of look on his face. So this is a huge get for him. For the Kings. I think he's a really underrated goalie prospect. Doesn't get a lot of publicity and fanfare, and I'm not sure why. But you know, they've got an incumbent number one with Jonathan Quick, and he's pretty secure as a starting goalie for the foreseeable future. But there isn't anything in the system after that really to be excited about until now. So Peterson should get his pro debut under his belt this season as a rookie, and he should play, I would think, the starting position with the Ontario Reign, their AHL affiliate, and we'll see how the season goes for him there. But he could be not long for the NHL. He's got a lot of upside.
Yeah, it kind of is too bad that he wanted out of Buffalo. I when I covered Buffalo a year back for DauberProspects.com, I had Cal Peterson making it into the Sabres now or next year, and I still think he had a better shot in the Sabres organization to do that, but I guess he wanted to move on. Maybe there was some stale words said. Who knows what was said behind closed doors, but moving to Los Angeles, he definitely only has one guy basically above him on the depth chart, I think, and that's obviously Jonathan Quick, so he can move up into the NHL sooner rather than later. A guy that you sent his name to me, and I had to look him up. Stepan Falkovsky. Tell us about Falkovsky.
Sure. So this is a player who was drafted last year by the Calgary Flames out of the Ottawa 67s. He played 1 year with the 67s and the O as an import player. And he's really hard to miss on the ice. I went to their very first game last year, which was an exhibition game between Gatineau. And I was with our Jets writer, Dave Dickinson. And we both looked at each other and looked at Falkovsky because he's like 6'6" or something like that. He's really tall. And we're like, holy smokes, who is this guy? He's huge. And then as the game went on, you know, we were like, man, he looks like a giraffe on skates. He's just really awkward looking and not a very graceful skater. And then as the game wore on even more, like, you know, for a big guy, he sure doesn't play very big. So there wasn't a lot to get really excited about, but as the season wore on, I saw significant improvements in his game to the point where I even wrote up a profile for him in last year's prospect report, thinking that, you know, I don't think there's much question that this guy's going to get drafted now. I mean, he did get drafted, albeit in the 7th round by the Flames, and then they never signed him, and I'm not sure how he managed to go. I guess he was an overager, but he went, you know, the Flames didn't sign him, and he became, I guess they didn't qualify him, and he became an unrestricted free agent, and like right away the Los Angeles Kings snapped him up. So I feel like that was poor asset management by Calgary, even if they didn't think that he was going to be able to crack their depth chart. And they have some pretty good D in Calgary, right? They've got Dennis Rasmussen and Oliver Shillington, and they just drafted Palomaki. So, you know, they've got some pretty good D in their system there. So I get that, but still, you should get something for the asset. He's up to 11% owned on Fantrax now. So if you're curious about owning him in your fantasy league, yes, he's a very big defenseman, but don't expect him to play the bangers and mash style. I don't think he's going to rack up many penalty minutes. And not a significant amount of hits. He'll probably block you some shots because, you know, he tries to be good defensively. There's some people who question how good he is in his own zone. And be careful when looking at his stats from last year. He had a really, really hot streak that artificially inflated his stats in a really short period of time over the course of the entire season. So don't get too excited about his offensive stats when you look at them. But for now, I think unless you're in like a super, super deep league, I wouldn't roster him yet, but I would certainly put him on your watch list.
The situation that he went through of being drafted and then not qualified and becoming a UFA and then signing a free agent contract with LA Kings, the Kings did this with another kid that is currently now on their roster as a mainstay. Jake Muzzin went through this whole ordeal. He was drafted with Pittsburgh and then went unsigned and went back. Didn't get drafted again, then was a unrestricted free agent and then signed a contract, and now he's making $4 million as Drew Doughty's partner. So if Falkovsky can find his game late into his 20-year-old year, he could definitely become a decent King, and I would put him on your watch list and keep him on your watch list.
Yeah, he skates pretty good. He's got to clean it up in his own end a little bit, and he's got to get a little nasty in his game as well. I mean, he's got the size, might as well use it, right? So if those aren't uncorrectable deficiencies in a game.
All right, moving on to let's move on to Joe Morrow, a guy that's just basically kept his suitcase packed. He's been four different teams. This will be his fourth different team, NHL team, in a very young career, 24-year-old. Played with Pittsburgh, played with Dallas's AHL team. Never actually played with Pittsburgh. He played with the Baby Penguins. Played with the Texas Stars, the AHL team for Dallas. The Providence Bruins, got some Boston time. And now he's signed a contract with Montreal. And is he going to be in Montreal, or is he going to be with the newly created Lavelle Rocket?
My money's on Laval. He's had chances with all of these organizations, and you know he's had 65 career NHL games played. He's got 2 goals and 9 points and a -8 in his NHL career. You know, there's reclamation projects all the time, and you look at, I know it's apples and oranges, but like, let's look at Devan Dubnyk. Flamed out in Edmonton, went to Nashville, crapped the bed there, crapped the bed in Montreal as well, and then went to Arizona for a little bit, and Sean Burke got his hooks into him. And then he wasn't there for very long, and he ends up in Minnesota, and just like that, he goes from fringe at best NHL goalie to Vezina nominee. So you never know. I mean, it's apples and oranges. We're talking about a defenseman and a goalie here, but I guess the thing for Moro is skating. Can he skate well enough to play in the NHL? It keeps getting faster. It keeps getting younger, and he's 24 years old now. So you'd think that if he was going to have developed that aspect of his game, we'd be there already.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's going to be competing with Brandon Davidson for that number six spot. And that he definitely has the ability to be better than Brandon Davidson, I think, but I just don't know if he has the mindset. Like, everywhere he goes, he never really tries to win any roster spots. So I think Mora will end up in Lavelle, or he'll end up in the press box as a number seven and get into the lineup with an injury on the lower end. Not if a top guy gets injured. I don't think he's going to get into a lineup spot. But yeah, Joe Mora is definitely that fringe defenseman in Montreal.
Well, Montreal trading Sergachev certainly didn't hurt Joe Morrow's chances.
Or Beaulieu.
That's right.
They moved out a lot, but the fact that Joe Morrow is still that fringe, that's not very good.
And it's still early in the offseason. It's July 6th, I think, Thursday night, as we're recording this. So there's still defensemen on the market and trade opportunities for Montreal to fill a hole or two. Let's talk about one of your Vegas boys. Timu Palkkinen signed a contract today. What do you think of Palkkinen?
I think he might have a chance to be in the third line. I really do. I know he hasn't done much everywhere he's gone. He's kind of skipped through teams, just like Joe Morrow kind of skipped through teams. And him signing a contract at 61% owned, I don't think he's going to be really fantasy relevant. But he's got a booming shot. Just a annihilating shot. And if he learns how to use it and able to get it off more times than not and on target, he definitely will get lots of shots, I believe, which might help in fantasy. But Polkinen probably, I can't see him making a top two in Vegas, and the highest he's probably going to get is a third line, if that. But I do think he's going to start as a third line guy and go from there, and hopefully he shows something and can at least put up some points. And he's the shot factor, it would be the biggest thing that I would be excited about.
Yeah, shooting is not his problem. He's got that covered. It's every other aspect of his game. I think he's a really good fantasy risk, because if he doesn't stick with Vegas, they'll send him to the minors, and then you can drop him off your roster for free if you're in a salary cap binding league. And if you're in a league where you can just free drop players, then go ahead, put him on your roster. And after a couple of weeks, if he's not having an impact, then you cut bait and you go to the waiver wire and you find one of these out of nowhere players. But I think going into the season, as a late round guy that you have on your reserve roster, I think Polkinen's, he's a fine gamble. All right, so let's go to Florida. Yeah. So Florida's got a couple of players coming over from Europe, and I think these guys have sneaky good value. The first one is probably a little bit of a familiar name, Evgeny Dadonov. He is 61% Fantrax owned, and he's coming back to Florida after a little hiatus in the KHL. I listened to an interview with Dale Talon on the radio, and he was saying how he has been waiting very patiently for his KHL contract to expire so that he could get him back in Florida and under contract. because every time he went to the World Championship and watch him play for Russia, he's like, he was the best player there. He's an offensive, dynamic player. He's going to play right in our top six. Currently only 61% owned on Fantrax. I think there's some opportunity with Dadonov.
Yeah, and Dale Tallon believes that. He's not just saying it on radio because he gave him $4 million for 3 years. So it's not like he was giving him a show me contract. He's I know what you can do, and I want you to be in Florida for many years. So, yeah, I think he really thinks Dadonov can fit into what he's building there with Huberdeau and Barkov and Trocheck. I think Dadonov will fit right in and be a big fantasy guy. The guy that I think you're going to get more value with, because I think Dadonov's going to go pretty high in most drafts, and you're going to have to get him pretty high in your entry draft if you're allowed to pick him with all the 2017 drafts in your draft. I think you're going to have to take him pretty high, and you might.
And if it's a cap league at $4 million, you know, he's got to produce a lot to earn that $4 million.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the better value is Henrik Hapala. I don't think a lot of people are going to know this Henrik Hapala, this Finnish kid that's coming over, and he's making highlight reel plays in development camp. You can see that from their Twitter feed. There's a lot of GIFs out there that he's lighting the lamp and also letting other guys light the lamp. So I really want to target Henrik Hapala in my entry drafts.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his salary is, but I'm sure it's on the lower side. And his Fantrax ownership is 26%. And yeah, I'm going to be targeting him in our DPFHL draft as well. But, you know, scoring some nice goals and making some nice plays on rushes in development camp are a pretty far cry from NHL caliber competition. So you take it all with a grain of salt. I'm not saying you should pick this guy after Nico Hischier in between Nolan Patrick, but, you know, put him pretty high on your list, because if he makes it and if he contributes, it's going to be right away or not at all. And the Florida Panthers are pretty high on him as well. Dale Tallon was commenting on him a couple of times in different interviews and press conferences when they were talking about the void in the roster that they had after free agency and the expansion draft. And he mentioned Henrik Hapala by name a couple of times as one of the players they have targeted to fill one of their voids in the top six role.
So he could fill Marchessault's 30 goals from last year?
Yep.
Then he's well worth the $925K for two more years, so...
Yeah,
that'd be kind of nice. I'm gonna search out for him in most of my entry drafts. So look out, Peter. I'm gonna steal him right from underneath your nose in the DPFHL.
Yeah, maybe. All right. So let's talk about. We talked a little bit about Ryan Murphy last episode as well, because he was. He was not qualified, but now that he's been, I don't think he was signed in our last episode. So now that he's been signed in Minnesota, he's still only 32% Fantrax owned. He's a, you know, fast skating, offensive transition, modern day, prototypical NHL defenseman. We talked about the injuries that he's had, some pretty serious knee injuries. I don't think it was a knee injury last year that caused him to miss games, though. I think it was like just a totally unrelated fluke injury, but another injury nonetheless. Where do you see his season panning out? Where do you have him on your fantasy radar, Paul?
I kind of had him under Mike Riley, who they also just signed 2 years, $725,000. I think he's going to be fighting with Mike Riley for that final sixth roster spot for the Wild. So, and these two guys aren't going to get very much offensive time because they got Suter, Spurgeon, Brodin, Dumba. They got a pretty set four. Maybe Dumba they could beat out, but Dumba's much more highly offensive. So I don't think these guys are going to get power play time. I don't think they're going to get power play two time. They're going to have to put numbers up 5-on-5, and I think Mike Riley might have a better chance to do that. So if I was picking between Mike Riley or Ryan Murphy, I'd be taking Mike Riley, and Ryan Murphy is 32% owned and Mike Riley is 61% owned on Fantrax. So if you can't get Mike Riley and you think they're going to be fighting, maybe you take a chance and try and get Ryan Murphy because he's less owned and probably available in most of your leagues. Maybe you do that, but I'm higher on Mike Riley than I am with Ryan Murphy.
You know, I was just thinking, you're absolutely right. It's going to come down between these two guys. And, you know, some of them one night will be in and the other will be serving popcorn in the press box. And they'll probably rotate back and forth unless one of them gets really hot or if the team goes on a hot winning streak. You just don't mess with your roster when you're winning. And then, of course, injury. Injury will create an opportunity within the roster for someone to step in. But history will probably show us the injury is probably going to go to Ryan Murphy. So that would mean really good news for Mike Riley. So, yeah, the Fantrax ownership numbers between these two players seems to be correct.
I agree with that. And I think Mike Riley has also the advantage of not being passed around teams. And Ryan Murphy kind of had that and didn't get qualified. And Mike Riley came out of NCAA last year, as a pretty top-end guy, so I think Mike Riley's got the advantage there, too.
Yeah, his adjustment, he came in really highly touted. You know, he was the hot college free agent signing, but his adjustment has been pretty bumpy since he came in. But that has been about, I can't remember if it was 1 year or two, but if he's got it figured out, then yeah. So if you have the choice between the two of them, go with Riley.
Maybe Justin Schultz comes to the back of your mind, talking about Mike Riley having a bumpy road?
Yeah, very similar. And, you know, like we were just talking about with reclamation projects and guys who are flaming out and then get a change of scenery and all of a sudden they catch lightning in a bottle. Dubnyk did it, and Justin Schultz did it in Pittsburgh. So maybe this is just the change of scenery that Ryan Murphy needs. Who knows? We'll see, right?
Yeah. All right, let's head to Edmonton. We were just talking about Schultz having a tough time in Edmonton. Hopefully Ty Ratty can turn it around. He just signed with the Oilers, 53% owned in Fantrax. What do you think, Ty Ratty? Is this his last shot?
No, I wouldn't say that. This is his second team only. Edmonton just cleared out a space with Tyler Pitlick, who I really like. He's an undersized player. He's prolific 200-plus point seasons in junior. The offense transitioned okay to the AHL level, but not okay to the NHL level, which is why he wasn't qualified. He's going to have an opportunity to play with some pretty talented players in Edmonton if he can crack a top nine even, right? Like, down the middle, they've got three pretty solid centers in McDavid, the Nuge, and Dreisaitl. So if he can wrench on the wing with one of those guys, who knows? He might catch lightning in a bottle. But, you know, the Edmonton Oilers have some pretty good wingers, too, even after losing Jordan Eberle. So he's got his work cut out for him, but I wouldn't say this is his last chance. If he doesn't make it on the Oilers' top nine in a roster spot there, he might get another chance with another team, but if his Fantrax ownership numbers will certainly bottom out, and rightfully so.
Yeah, and it's actually his third team because he went to Carolina for like 5 games and then went back St. Louis. It was weird. They claimed him off waivers and then put him back on waivers, and then St. Louis claimed him back, and it was a weird instance. He only got nine NHL games between St. Louis and Carolina, but yeah, it'll be his third team. So I don't think Carolina really counts, though. That seemed like an odd situation.
Yeah, fair enough. I had forgotten about that. My apologies. All right, so let's talk about the player that Edmonton moved away from to make room for Ty Ratty, and that's Tyler Pitlick. So he was a second-round pick by the Oilers, and he's plagued by injury. We might have talked about him on the last episode, too. Had a great start to the season last year. He wasn't waiver-eligible anymore, so they stuck him on the roster. He stayed on the ice, not in the press box, and he started the season strong. He was putting up points. And then, injuries reared their ugly head with this poor kid again, and he was gone for the rest of the season. So I guess Edmonton decided that he's too much of a Band-Aid boy. They didn't qualify him, and Dallas has signed him. Dallas has had a really good offseason. They've made a lot of adjustments and moves and shaken up the roster, and I really like them to be a contender in the West. And I think Tyler Pitlick is a player that, if he can stay healthy, should have a really good chance at carving himself out a decent roster spot, maybe replacing a guy like Patrick Eames or something like that. How do you see Tyler Pitlick?
Yeah, I think his main problem is his big demon is his health. And should we start a Band-Aid boy just like Dauber? Like, are you allowed to with prospects who don't get very much time? We need to talk to Dauber about that and see if we can add some.
We're Dauber Prospect Radio. Like, it's not stealing.
True, right? Like, I think we should be allowed to add some prospect Band-Aid boys to his huge list.
Bangers and Mash, we totally stole that from Keith Carlson.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. How rude.
It's true. And I told them, they're cool with it.
They're probably happy. It's bumping their ego up.
That's right. It's a compliment to them.
All right, let's move on to the AHL MVP of last year. Kenny Agostino's moving to the Boston Bruins organization. I really hope he gets some NHL time. This guy's had a career year last year and outscored the entire AHL, 83 points in 65 games. His next closest competitor was at 68 points, so he had 15 points on him, which is a pretty big lead. I really hope Agostino gets a third line spot and maybe can work his way up into the second line. I think the Bruins need some more scoring, and I think Kenny Agostino can do that. He's 48% owned in Fantrax, so should be available. He's available in over half the leagues in Fantrax, so Agostino's a guy to watch going into training camp.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see too much of him play in his career so far, but it's hard to ignore the numbers that he put up last year. They're pretty solid. The Bruins have some pretty decent depth. He's a left winger, so he'll be behind Marchand. Frank Petrano, I think, has proven that he can score at the NHL level. They've got Matt Bolesky under contract. And then some other rookies that he'll be competing with would be Jesse Gabriel will be turning pro. Anders Bjork is a highly touted prospect who would be fun if he could make it because of the Swedish Chef connection. And I'm not sure if Jake DeBrusk is turning pro. I think he's going to stay in college. So, and that's just at the left wing. You know, they've got some centers and right wings that might interchange as well. But he's going to have a chance to earn himself a roster spot in either the third or the fourth line. So we'll see how he does at training camp would be my suggestion on him.
All right, Peter, you got another guy that I don't know too much about, and the Fantrax ownership really shows that maybe not a lot of people know about him. 18% owned, Neil Pionk from the New York Rangers.
Yes, I just he's just popped up on my radar because of his performance at development camp. I happened to catch a video on the Twitter feed with the Rangers director of player development, and he was talking about some of their prospects, and this is one of the guys that he was talking about, and he was saying some really nice things about him, and I saw some other really nice things about him from people who were at camp saying this guy's one of the best players in camp. So he played his junior hockey in the USHL, and he was named their Defenseman of the Year in the 2014-15 season. The last 2 years, he's been playing NCAA with Minnesota Duluth. So 2 years, and then he's signed his pro contract. Last year, he scored 34 points in 42 games as a defenseman. That's very good. So he's an offensive defenseman. He's a plus skating kind of guy, so he fits into the, you know, the NHL model these days. And he's even got decent size. He's, you know, he's not huge, but he's 6 feet, 190. So given today's NHL average size, he's adequate for sure. He can skate. He can create transition offense. He's a really great get for the New York Rangers as a free agent. They signed him back in May. So his Fantrax ownership is only 18%, which is super low. And I think he's even got a chance to crack the roster out of training camp. If not, he'd be well worth rostering and sitting on him for a year to see how he does in the pro level in the AHL. If he does well there, then he won't be long for the NHL. One more player I think we should talk about before we end this segment, dude, is Nelly Yakupov, former first overall. We talked about him last week, and he has landed. He signed an NHL deal, 1 year, what was it, like $700,000? Ridiculously low.
$875,000.
Yeah, under $1 million in Colorado. He's only 60% Fantrax owned, so he's just over in half of the leagues. I know that everyone's got a bad taste in their mouth with this guy, but you should be able to get him really cheap and really late. And I don't really like Colorado either, but he was a first overall pick. I would absolutely, and this is the same thing as what we talked about with Polkinen, I would absolutely be willing to roll the dice on acquiring him. If he doesn't work out, he'll get off the roster somehow. You'll be able to purge him. Or if you're league, you can just drop guys and just drop him. If he doesn't play on a line with, you know, Nate McKinnon or Matt Duchene, then, you know, because he's not doing anything and only playing like 7 minutes a game, then just drop him and get someone who's hot on the waiver wire to start the season. But I think it's a much more safe prediction to say that Nail Yakupov is going to have points than some guy who's a long shot to make the roster. I would look at him as a fantasy option.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking at him as a late round, probably not last round or last two rounds, but maybe the last third round, and try and beat some guys that are also thinking the same thing. Because how is Colorado not going to put this guy on McKinnon's line to start? And then if he falters there and McKinnon doesn't like him, or they're not meshing well, he's going to fall to Matt Duchene's line. So if Matt Duchene is still there, which I kind of expect him to be, but they're going to give Yakupov every chance in the world to play with the top line guys to try and give this guy a spark and get this guy's game going, because nobody else has figured out how to get him going. Edmonton had nothing. St. Louis had no answers. Colorado obviously is taking a shot, and they think they could find answers. And you never know with kids like this, that third time's the charm, or he's been shot down so many times that his confidence is shot, and maybe Colorado's got somebody that can pick his confidence back up. Maybe just getting into a new dressing room, he may take a self-check and be like, listen, I'm much better than how I'm playing. I got to get back in the gym in the off season. I'm taking a shot on Yakupov in pretty much every one of my redraft leagues, yearly redraft leagues, and my dynasty and keeper leagues. I'll be looking out for him.
Yeah, look at it this way. I'd say it's more likely that he flames out and you end up throwing him away after a month of the year or the season or whatever. But in your whatever round you're in, depending on how big your pool is, if you're in the eighth round and you're looking at drafting a third line winger from Detroit or a former first overall draft pick from like 5 years ago, like, man, take a chance on him. He's got how many other guys in the third line have 60 point upside? And if Yakupov figures it out, goes through all the things you just said and plays on a line with McKinnon, and all of a sudden these two guys are the hottest line in the NHL. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities that he could score 60 points next year, and at that cap hit, that's tremendous. It's more likely that he plays 5 minutes a night and gets driven out of the league by the All-Star game, and you drop him by, like, you know, Thanksgiving. But why not swing for the fences there? And if he flames out, so you drop him and you get that guy that you didn't draft anyways, right? You haven't really lost anything. It's a calculated fantasy risk that if you want to win your pool, those are the kind of gambles that you have to take. And when they pay off, you'll look like a genius.
All right, Peter, that's it for free agency, free agent frenzy. Well, I don't know what we're calling it, free agent prospects. After the break, we're going to talk about a lot of development camps around the league and name some standout guys that we've seen, that we've had some of our Dauber prospect writers see live. But that's when we come back. What I do want to tell you about before we leave, you guys, the listeners, have to check out Keeping Carlson. If you really enjoy this podcast and you're listening every other week, you got to listen to Keeping Carlson. Right now, they're recording every other week and posting. You also can sign up to their Patreon, patreon.com/keepingcarlson. For just $5 a month, you'll be invited to join their Keeping Carlson Ultimate Fantasy Hockey League. All right, time to talk about development camps, and we'll be going around the NHL. We're going to hit up probably 7 or 8 teams. Peter, let's start with the New York Rangers. Who's your standout of the New York Rangers?
All right, so I'm hearing some really good things coming out of New York about their 2017 first-round picks. Heitel and Elias Anderson apparently are living up to billing on Broadway so far. Lots to be excited about there.
Yeah, they scored a couple goals in the scrimmage. I think Hill scored 2, and Elias Anderson also scored 1, so they're looking pretty good. Hill's going to have a tough time. He's very young. He missed the NHL cutoff for next year's draft by 20 days, so he's a very young draftee, so that might be harming his stock, so beware of that. Let's go to same city, but the Islanders. Who's your standout?
Okay, so this one's interesting, and we talked a little bit about this before we started recording. So development camp is for rookies and the younger guys. It's all about, this is what it takes to be a pro. Gives them their first glimpse into the lifestyle of pro hockey, and media training and how to manage their money and all that stuff on ice. It's the team's first chance to get a look at in their own practices as well, as opposed to just watching them from a scouting perspective. So it's really geared towards the younger, greener prospects and minor league guys. And Josh Hosang is at the Islanders development camp. So that's a little bit weird. So that might be sort of like a punishment thing. Maybe it's to try and help him keep his ego in check. Maybe, but I think it's probably more the other side of the equation here. I think it might be them saying, look, we want you to come to development camp this year. We want you to be the elder statesman, the veteran. You know, show these kids who might be getting, big heads. Oh, I'm drafted in the NHL. I'm big stuff now, and it's all going to be amazing for me. And, you can kind of like tell them, well, man, trust me, it doesn't work that way. I found that out the hard way. It's not like that. Anyway, yeah, I think it'll be very interesting. And he played a little bit last year as well, and in the NHL and near the end of the season. And he looked pretty good. His ownership in Fantrax is 89%. We talk about prospects with off-ice issues and personal or attitude issues, and like Anthony D'Angelo and Josh Hosang are the poster boys for this, but it's starting to look more and more and more like Hosang's figured it out. And I wouldn't be surprised if he has, then if that's the case, then he cracks the roster and plays a full season on Long Island this year. What's your angle on this?
There's one other situation it could be. You said that maybe the Islanders wanted him there. Maybe they made him go because they want to keep his ego in check. But I read an article this morning about Alex Tuck from the Vegas Golden Knights, that he didn't even get asked to go because they figured he was an elder prospect and he's been to enough. I think he's been to 3 or 4 in Minnesota. And they didn't even send him an invite. They didn't give him any of the information. And he went out and seeked out the information. I don't know if it was from his agent or he got a hold of George McPhee himself, I'm not really sure, but he ended up going to Vegas Golden Knights development camp on his own. He requested that he be allowed to attend, and they obviously let him. And the reason why he did it was because he figured he was going to be growing up with these guys in the organization, and he wanted to get to know them as soon as possible. He figured might as well start learning how to play with these guys and have some fun and be that leadership role right away. So maybe that's why Josh Hosang's going. Maybe he's trying to show his leadership side of things and showing that he is grown up, and he wants to see the new guys come in, and he wants to show the rest of the organization and the other players that maybe he's here for hockey and his team and not just for himself. So that could be another situation that Hosang is attending the New York Islanders.
Interesting. If that were indeed the case, that would be a tremendously good thing. That would alleviate a lot of the concerns I have about him as a player because of character. So hopefully that is the case.
And right. Hearing that article, it made me like Alex Tuch even more. So I pumped his tires pretty good last week on the episode. So I don't know how much more I can pump his tires, but I'm a big fan of Alex Tuch. Let's just say that. So let's move on to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Who's your big standout?
All right. So I'm obviously not at Tampa's development camp, but I did happen to catch a video on Twitter of the Lightning's player of development, whatever it's called, Stacey Roost. And he was talking about a lot of their prospects, and I really like a lot of Tampa Bay's prospects. But some of the players that he talked about that really stood out were obviously Mikhail Sergachev. They recently acquired him for Jonathan Drouin. At the draft, I was in a media scrum talking to Steve Yzerman, and the question came up, is Sergachev going to play in the NHL next year? And of course he gave a non-committal answer saying, you know, blah blah blah, it's up to him, we're not going to rush him, he's ready at training camp, he's ready and we'll see and all that nonsense. So anyways, he showed up at the development camp looking pretty ready by the sounds of it. They are very impressed with what they saw and they like what they have, but you know, Yzerman, coming from that old school Detroit model, he is not going to rush him, and I wouldn't be surprised if, as ready as Sergachev probably is to play in the NHL, that they send him back to junior and maybe he finishes the year in the playoffs with Tampa, depending on how it goes in Windsor or wherever he plays in the OHL next year. Another Tampa Bay, yeah. Some other Tampa Bay players that Stacey mentioned were some of their defensemen, Dominic Machine and Cernak, and that they're looking really good. We've talked about Machine a couple of times on the podcast before. I watched him play in Syracuse a couple of times live last year. He didn't really have any sort of, you know, fantasy stats to speak of, but I think that's coming. I think last year was just his adjustment year in the AHL, and he's got a chance to make it. Not next year, but eventually. The other player that he mentioned that I was really curious about and tuned into when he was talking is Samuel Walker. So he's a kid that Tampa picked in the 7th round in the draft, 200th overall. I know nothing about this guy, so I was listening to what he had to say about him, and he's he's one of the undersized, really fast, highly skilled players. He's already committed to going to University of Minnesota next year, so that's where he's going to be. But that's a name that you certainly might want to put on your fantasy watch list, and kind of monitor how his career goes on, because the way that Stacey Roos was talking about him, Tampa really loves this player.
Interesting. I want to reiterate that we have not been able to attend any development camps live, so we've just kind of picked and prodded from people that we know who have gone to camps or have read articles that from people that we know who went to camps. So this is not any live take. This is just reading articles and contacts with people that we know that have gone and getting in touch with DauberProspects.com. So a lot of this is just passing on information that we have been passed on. So let's go one more Eastern Conference team, the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, so speaking of where we're getting our information from, I did a Prospect Ramblings update on development camps, and Silver Sevens had a post from one of their guest fan writers who had attended camp, and he talked about a couple of players. Most of them were pretty straightforward. One player who I was glad that he mentioned was Nick Paul. I've been a fan of his since he played with North Bay. I own him in a couple of leagues. And he kind of took a step back last year. 2 years ago, he played about half of the season in the NHL with the Senators, and then he played all of last year, pretty much, in the AHL, and had a decent AHL season, but I don't think he was at any point really close to being called up to the NHL. So he goes into development camp, and he dominates. He's one of the best standout players in the Sens camp, ahead of a lot of their other highly touted prospects. So that was really good to see. I like Paul. I don't think he'll ever project into a top six role in the NHL. He's a bottom line kind of guy, but he's got size and he can skate and he can make plays. So I like his chances of making it to the NHL. Another player he mentioned who he didn't like what he saw from was Logan Brown, and he said that he was kind of not looking very committed. I was also reading up a little bit on Hockey's Futures board, and a couple of people there sounded like, I don't know that they were, but they sounded like they were at the development camp or at least watching it, and they didn't like what they saw either. So again, it's only a development camp, and he had a long, not really a long season. They lost in the first round, but he played in the Memorial Cup just recently, so he might have the Memorial Cup hangover carrying over into development camp. But that was a red flag for sure, that Logan Brown was looking pretty terrible at Sens camp.
And is Brown able to go back to Windsor for another
Yep.
year? So they could have quite a few decent guys if Sergachev ends up going back and DiPietro we're going to talk about coming up with Ryan Beach. He's probably headed back. I don't think he's able to go to Utica, so they're going to have a pretty decent team still in Windsor.
Possibly, yeah, and Vilardi as well will he'll be back too. Bracco's going to graduate, that's for sure. But yeah, we'll see
And
what.
it's really interesting about Nick Paul. Let's go back to Nick Paul. He's only 28% owned in Fantrax, and the other guys that we've kind of named, like Josh Hosang and Sergachev and Brown, they're all 86, 89% owned. And then you got a guy like Nick Paul who looked really good in development camping, maybe could find a spot in Ottawa, and he's only 28% owned. So you're probably got a good chance of picking up Nick Paul in your pool.
Yeah, but like I said, he doesn't have top six upside that Hosang and Sergachev have.
And that would make sense why he's only 28% owned and not 80+ percent owned. Let's go
Yeah.
to the Western Conference, Peter. Yeah, you mentioned Los Angeles Kings with Vilardi, so let's stick there. Who's the Kings standout?
Yeah, so one of the people who contributed some information to me for my prospect ramblings on development camps was Sheng Peng. He was able to go, and he said, you expect the older players to look better at the development camp, and they did. And he named my boy Boko Amama, who I absolutely love, but he also named another player I didn't really know much about, Alex Iafallo, and he is only 7% owned. So I still need to do a little bit of research on him, but I thought I'd go ahead and throw the name out on the podcast anyways. Sounds like he's a super speedy player. He's an offensive kind of winger. I need to do a little bit more research on him, so I can't fully endorse him as a player. But he's certainly someone who has appeared on my radar.
All right, Peter, and one more team from the West Coast. Well, not West Coast, Midwest. St. Louis Blues. Give us your standout.
Yeah, so I saw a really nice short little video GIF, whatever they're called, on Twitter, and I said, hey, if you're looking for an offensive defenseman in your fantasy league, go ahead and draft Jake Walman. Talked about him a couple of times on the podcast before. I told you a story about when I was at a playoff game in Kitchener. I managed to bump into Tim Taylor and asked him who are some players they've got coming down the pipe that would be really good to own in fantasy hockey. And the first player he mentioned was Jake Walman, offensive defenseman. Skates really, really well. He's got a really good set of hands on him as well. Sees the ice, reads plays, can create transition offense. He's pretty widely owned, 65% on Fantrax, so he might not be available in your pool, but if you're able to scoop him up, I think he's probably going to make the team this year. And he might be in a bit of an insulated role as a rookie. I don't think we're talking about Zach Werenski kind of an impact here, but he's certainly someone in a keeper league that you're going to want to own.
All right, Peter, thanks for all those standouts. Hopefully it helped people researching for next year's draft, this coming year's draft, which is probably happening in the next month or so. I know the DPFHL has set not a full date in pen. It's in pencil, July 17th. That's going to be pretty exciting. We will probably talk about that at some point over the summer season when we're trying to find stuff to talk about. But when we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Ryan Beach of Canucks Army about the Vancouver Canucks Development Camp, their 2017 entry draft that we really applauded them for. So that'll be after the break.
But before we go, I'm going to take a moment. I'm going to remind everybody that they should go ahead and check out the draft analyst. Our good friend, Steve Corianos, does great work. If you go to his site today, you can catch his preliminary 2018 draft rankings. They're already posted. Just recently, he did his 2017 draft grades, letter grades for each 31 teams. So you can see how he gives a little comment on pretty much every player. So it's a pretty extensive article. And then throughout the year, he's got, you know, updated rankings, scouting reports from international tournaments that he watches online or maybe attends live. He writes profiles for a lot of the top prospects, and he does like a full 7-round mock draft every year. He's been posting highlight reel films for top prospects. He's just a really, really great prospect site to go to. The guy just, he's really passionate about hockey prospects and puts in a lot of time in his blog, and it's really good material. I reference it a lot in my scouting analysis on players and in my research. I put a lot of value in Steve's opinion and in his assessment of players. So go check it out. It's The Draft Analyst. Follow him on Twitter, The Draft Analyst, and you'll thank me later. We're back on Topper Prospect Radio. It's segment 3. It's time to talk to our guest. And today we have pulled in Ryan Beach, who is coming at us from Vancouver. He's going to the Canucks development camp. He's been to some of the practices. He's going to the scrimmage later on this evening. So he's going to be able to break down some of the Canucks stuff for us. So thanks for coming on the podcast, Ryan. Welcome to Topper Prospects.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. So before we get too far into it, do me a favor and give us a little bit of a background. Where can our listeners find your writing styles?
Primarily, my stuff is on Canucks Army, where we do a lot of prospects around the league, including obviously Canucks primarily. And then I do a little bit of freelance work for Canucks.com for their website as well, primarily focusing on prospects and the upcoming drafts and things like that for them.
Nice. And we can follow you on Twitter. Your Twitter handle is... at Ryan Beach?
Yes, B-I-E-C-H. Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, yeah. I recommend giving Ryan a follow. He knows his stuff, and he's a prominent Twitterer. He has interesting takes, and he's on regularly. Okay, so let's talk some Canucks prospects. I think we should start with the draft. A couple of the players that the Canucks picked, Paul and I are really fans of, and we've spoken about them on the show a couple of times as well. So let's start with round one, Elias Pettersson. They drafted him a little bit higher than we had projected him to go. How did you feel about that pick?
I think it was the right pick for them specifically. They were looking for, you know, a playmaking center that they would hope could be their number one center ahead of Bo Horvat in the long-term future. And I think that Pettersson gives them the best option for that. The safer pick might have been someone like Cody Glass, but I think that, you know, you're kind of a little bit more swinging for the fences when it comes to Pettersson. He kind of just has that whole dynamic skill set, has his crafty vision, things like that, where he may be able to reach that higher ceiling. So it may have been considered a reach at five, but I think and I'm sure you guys have talked about it, that after the first couple it was kind of a free-for-all. It was a grouping of players and any one of them was justifiable there, and so I think it was justifiable to take Pettersson there, and given that long-term outlook of wanting a playmaking center who could be their first line center, I think that was the right direction to go.
Do you think it helped? Do you think it helped Elias Pettersson because he's Swedish and the Sedins are there and they can kind of take him under his wing for their last couple of years?
We've asked Jim Benning and Trevor Linden at camp here about that, and they said it didn't really factor into the decision, but I don't think it's something that hurts. I think it's definitely helpful. Having Jonathan Dahle and his line mate from Timrå definitely helps, but I don't think it was part of the consideration. But you can't deny those two's chemistry. It's pretty pretty dynamic for sure.
So my impression on Pettersson is that he has the upside to be potentially the most offensively dangerous player in the draft, and maybe even the bell of the ball where they got him. He could be, he's got the skill and the speed and the vision and the creativity to be considered a first round pick, but I think the size, he's a very lean fellow coming in at about 150 or something. So it sounds like there's going to be some development time. Is that the way you see it as well? And if so, do you think maybe him and the Sedins might not actually even overlap?
It's possible. You're definitely right about his lean. I think he registered as a 160 pounds at the combine in early June. We saw him without equipment for interviews and stuff like that. And he is a very skinny kid for sure. And his older brother, who's now a Nashville, well, has been a Nashville prospect, but is now coming over to play for them in Milwaukee. He's only, I think, 175 pounds at 23, if I'm not mistaken. But I think he'll be able to, you know, add 20, 25 pounds and still be okay at 180, 185. The way he plays, that he doesn't rely so much on his size. It's a little bit more crafty and dipping in and out of coverage and being a little bit more, you know, elusive with the puck, where I don't think physicality is going to be a concern. He is going to go back to the SHL next year, obviously to play and hopefully, you know, eat some cheeseburgers and things like that to gain some weight. But there might not be that overlap of the two, but it is possible, because I think the Sedin twins are going to come back for at least one more year, if not two. And if it's that 2 year, then I think that's when you see the transition of the, you know, those actual Swedish twins to the new hopeful Swedish twins.
Yeah, I think the upside on Pettersson is very high, and you said it right off the bat there, is kind of a swing for the fences. I wouldn't call him a boom or a bust, but I think the certainty of his upside isn't as sure, but it is certainly high. So let's move on and talk a little about a Western guy you might have actually seen play live a little bit, Cole Lind, who they got, I believe, was in the second round. What's your take on Mr. Lind?
Yeah, they got him 33rd overall. He was the player that they had their eye on for the first round, and, you know, he kind of fell out, and they were giddy with excitement to get him at 33. I've seen him a couple times live because he came and played the Vancouver Giants here in town. Again, a really smart guy who's really crafty with the puck. The thing I really like about him is he's very versatile. He can play the wing, he can play center, he can score goals, he can make passes, he's defensively responsible. He just kind of does everything really well. Talking to him, he's a very smart and articulate kid as well. So I think, you know, when you're in that 33 range, you know, just outside of that first round, you're hoping for a player that's fallen out of the first round that's going to be almost a sure bet to make it to the NHL in some capacity. And I think Cole Lind will be that. I don't think he'll ever be a first line player. But I think, you know, as a second line center winger, or on a really good team, you know, a really good third liner, that's possible. And that's, you can't complain with that at that point in the draft.
And he had a really great draft year, 87 points in 70 games played, more than doubled his previous year. So he definitely improved over the draft year.
Yeah, and from an underlying number aspect, he basically propped everyone up whenever he was with them. Their goal differentials and their goals for were lower, and then anytime they were with Lind, it was higher. And what's particularly intriguing is that the first part of the season, is that he was really ranked quite low in the draft, like mid-third kind of thing, or 72nd overall, I think, by a draft service, and other ones didn't even have him ranked at all. And he kind of just skyrocketed into that first round talent after about 15 games into the season. He just went on a tear and never stopped. So it's definitely encouraging if they can build on that. And he's just been added to the Team Canada development camp this summer in Calgary. So that's a good sign that he's now been, you know, a player that's been added to there, and hopefully can build off that and then, you know, be a leader for Kelowna next year.
Do you have a feeling he's going to make Team Canada, or is he just getting experience?
I think he's getting experience. I think he's just kind of on the fringes right now. If I'm not mistaken, he would still be eligible for 2019. I'd have to double check that based on his birthday, but that's probably more likely of an option than right now during his, you know, his D plus 1 year.
Yeah, that'd be excellent if he could make the team, maybe as a last roster spot, but hopefully he can go back in 2019 and make it. Let's move on to Michael DiPietro, the goaltender that fell into the third round. He went in, but he was third goalie taken off the board, so he didn't really fall that much. But Michael DiPietro, the Memorial Cup winner, how has he been in camp?
He's been really good. But I'm going to have to correct myself, because if I don't, I'll be kicking myself the whole way. But Cole Lind actually has a really early birthday, so he is not eligible for 2018, because he'd already be 20 by that time. So that's unfortunate. But anyhow, moving on to DiPietro, is that he's actually been really good in camp. You know, he shows off that athleticism that kind of carried him to where he is right now. He's very quick to, you know, not recover, but make those desperation saves in second and third time things, where he gets himself caught out of position or something like that. His quickness is very noticeable. You do notice he's a little bit smaller at 6 feet, but it's not something that's going to be egregious or something to be concerned about. What he does need to work on is getting a little bit more efficient in his movements and tracking of the puck when moving laterally. If he can kind of fine tune those things, then he won't have to make so many desperational saves. He can, you know, focus on making that first save or guiding the puck out of the way to the corners or something like that, right? And then when the time comes, he can use his athletic abilities to recover and make those, you know, huge saves that he's known for, right? He's, again, a really smart kid, really articulate. I mean, he seems to just get what he needs to do to make it to the next level. So if you're going to take a goalie who's going to be a slightly undersized, I think DiPietro is a good dice roll on that aspect, because he just seems to know what he needs to do to take that next step. And from talking to, you know, some goalie people who are there, the kid is just on the ice all the time. He's always wanting to get better. So it's encouraging for sure.
Yeah, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, because we're going to talk about Demko in a bit, but with a young heir apparent waiting in the wings in Thatcher Demko, and then they use a third round pick on a goalie, obviously there's no sense of urgency on DiPietro. I would put the wait time on him as like two more years of junior at least, and then probably at least another year in pro hockey in the minor level, so 3 years away. Is that at the earliest is where I see it. Is that would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I'd agree. Because he has a younger birthday, he won't turn 20 until basically, like, he just turned 18 a couple weeks ago. So he won't turn 20 for another two full years, basically. So he will be eligible to go back to the OHL for 2 years. So I'd expect him to do so. When it comes to Utica this year, it's going to be Bachman and Demko splitting it. So that's 1 year. And then the second year it'll be Demko, Show, and Utica next year. So there's really no point in graduating DiPietro up to there, even if they could. So, and then once that year is done, so two full years from now, Demko is then going to have to graduate to the NHL. So then DiPietro is going to graduate to the AHL and then be the guy there, kind of thing. It's a good succession plan, but yeah, if you're looking at someone like DiPietro for a fantasy hockey idea, it's going to be a minimum 4 years from this point before he even gets a sniff as a backup, and that would be a backup to Demko kind of thing, right?
Yeah, well, a lot can change in that amount of time, but that's certainly the way it looks on my map right now as well, and I think he's worth the wait. I think he's got upside to be a starting goalie. Okay, so the last player from the draft I wanted to talk to you about was our boy Petrus Palmu. We talked about him a couple of times earlier in the year, even. He had a really breakout season in the O, right at the top of the scoring leaders all season long as an overager. And then he made the World Juniors for Team Finland, even though they had a really disappointing tournament. And he was not so great. I was a little surprised to see that he was drafted. I thought there were other overage players available in the draft that, well, I did a ranking and he didn't make my top 10. But obviously I was wrong. So tell us what you think of Pomu. You've had a chance to see him a little bit. You probably watched him at the juniors, maybe a little bit on TV in the O. What's your analysis on Petrus Pomu?
He's just like he's a little water bug. He kind of just works his little butt off all the time to try to do everything. And he's always extremely noticeable in the games winning in the OHL. So that's an encouraging sign for someone who's so small height wise. When you see him, in equipment, he is like a little fire hydrant. He's built like a little tank and he skates extremely well. From what I can see, and we're obviously going to touch on a bit more later, is the development camp, is that there really wasn't a way to get him off the puck because he has such a low center of gravity that players can't really push him off the puck. So he does a really good job of protecting it despite his smaller size. I think it was a good swing for the fence pick for the Canucks where it was. They had traded down and acquired another pick. And this pick was used to take Petrus Palmu, and if it never works out, that's fine. But I think that's exactly the kind of player you want to take at 181st overall, a swing for the fences. And because of his age, he's going to have to turn pro next year, whether that's in Finland or in Utica, and we'll see how it goes from there. But I like the risk taken from it. From a Canucks standpoint, it's definitely a different plan of attack than what they've done previously, and they've been criticized for being too safe and taking, big guys who don't really put up points. So going for a smaller guy who puts up a lot of points and who's supremely skilled is a good change of direction.
So do you see him likely playing in Finland next year? I can't remember if I saw him. He signed a contract in Finland. That might be getting him confused with another Finn.
No, you're right. Yeah, he signed with TPS. But he mentioned this week that his agent and the Canucks are going to talk about what the plan is, and he may end up going to Utica just because they don't have a lot of offensive forwards, and there might be an opportunity there to do so. It's probably something that will kind of get hashed out over the next couple weeks.
Interesting. All right, so let's move on, and let's talk about some of the bigger guns, some of the more juicy fantasy hockey options. For a team that hasn't been bottoming out for very long and had the Oilers' plan of winning draft lottery after draft lottery, they have some pretty good prospects. They got some cornerstone pieces in place. Adding Pettersson as a center is a huge get out of this draft, and we just talked about him. But they've also got Besser, Ylevi, and Demko, cornerstones in each position. I think the guy closest to the NHL is Brock Besser. He played a little bit at the end of last year, and looks like he's going to stick this year. Is that the way you see it, too?
Yeah, I think so. The Canucks have been kind of fairly active in the UFA market to kind of, insulate these younger players. But I think Besser will be the one who will start the season in the NHL in kind of a top nine role, like a second or third line role. So if you're going to, target one player for that kind of aspect, that's definitely Besser will be the one of the group who will make the NHL and will probably have some sort of impact. I don't think you'll have a huge offensive output like he did last year. In those nine games he had four goals, if I'm not mistaken. He's not going to keep that pace, but he should probably put up close to 15 to 20 goals if he's playing enough minutes in there and gets power plays then.
That'd be really nice. How about the back end, Ole Ylevi? Is he got a shot to make the team, or is he going to go to Utica?
Well, he can't go to Utica, so he's going to definitely – it's either the OHL or the NHL for him just because of the CHL agreement. But they're kind of in a rock and a hard place. He has to beat someone to take a job, and there are people within the organization who want him to be there, and then there's people who want to take the longer-term approach. The only problem is that, they can't go to Utica. So if I had to hazard a guess, I would think that he ends up not in the NHL next year. They'll probably want to go one more year without him in the NHL, and then he'll come up next year and kind of have a full-time role as a bottom pairing guy. I guess that's 2018-19. He'll have a bottom pairing role from there and kind of go and see what happens.
Does he have any option to play in Finland?
It's possible. They'd have to work out an agreement with the London Knights and then obviously whichever team would take him. And my guess is because it's the London Knights, I don't think that will happen because they would have to agree to it. If it was another team, that they may want to do so for some financial considerations, but we all know who London is, and I doubt that they'll want it to do that. They'd want to have Ole Ylevi back.
I'd be all right with another year of watching him in the OHL.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other player we talked about is Thatcher Demko. He played in pro hockey last year. I believe it was his rookie pro season. How did he do? And with the departure of Ryan Miller, does that expedite his ascension in the depth chart?
No, I don't think so. I think they want to take a really long-term approach with him. For this year, the outlook for the Canucks is they did sign Anders Nielsen to a two-year contract, and Markstrom is signed for 3 years starting this year. His extension kicks in. So, you know, that's kind of your 1-2 right there, unless injuries occur. So that automatically puts Demko down in the minors. And the Canucks had to extend Richard Bachman because of the expansion draft. They needed to have a goalie that met the exposure requirements. So now there's, no matter what, they have Bachman and Demko down there, where ideally you'd like Demko to kind of be the guy down in Utica this year. But there's, you know, there's the veteran AHL goalie and then a goalie with 1 year of experience. For Demko's year last year, he started off a little slow. There was some adjustment to the pro hockey from college hockey. He seemed to just kind of be a step behind on most things, but I can't remember the exact time frames, but at one point Miller got injured for a bit, and that necessitated Bachman being recalled up to the NHL, and then it was Demko's net from there, and he just took fire, like just went crazy for the second half of the season and showed a lot of good signs. So hopefully it's going to be, you know, that second half is what of things to come for this year. And he can kind of wrestle the starting job away from Bachman. Bachman's contract is just for 1 year. So next year I would expect Demko to be the guy in Utica, the number one starter. And then they might sign kind of a journeyman to be the backup to him. And then in the following year, because of, you know, waiver eligibility rules and things like that, then he's going to graduate up to be the backup to Markstrom probably as Nielsen's contract is over.
Well, that is a long approach. I had him as a potential guy that he'll see some, you know, a couple cups of coffee in the NHL this year. There's injuries and whatnot always rear their ugly heads.
He definitely could do so. Like, that's not out of the question. Markstrom hasn't seemed to be able to stay healthy all year. And obviously, we don't know what will happen with Nielsen. He just has to put himself ahead of Bachman. That's the key. And I know, as much as Bachman has been a very good pro over the course of his career, he does kind of have a bit of up and down. So as long as Demko's out playing him, Demko could get some time up as an injury replacement.
Yeah, Bachman's kind of peaked as a career minor leaguer, right? So if you've got a potential franchise goalie developing in your system, you don't want him to ride behind to a veteran AHL goalie. You want to develop. That's the point of really the AHL.
The comments of with Willie Desjardins being let go and Travis Green being promoted, the Canucks have a new coach down there, Trent Cull. So it's a whole new thing. This year I might have expected, if there wasn't any changes, then this year coming up, I might have expected Green to, you know, go towards Bachman more. But because it's a completely fresh start, Demko can come in and just prove that he should be the guy, and Bachman could be the one riding the pine the whole time. And Demko did get called up to, you know, cash some NHL checks while there was some injury throughout the year. So last year, so that could be the same thing again.
Yeah, and if they're going to be competing for a lottery position, which it might not be a bad idea to do so, then you don't want to put your goalie prospect in that situation.
No, exactly. I think, you know, if I'm going to ultimately, you know, put my name on the line here, I'm going to guess is that he's going to get a call up or two as the injury replacement. And he's probably going to get a game or two to kind of see, you know, so everybody can find out where he's at. And then so that he knows where to go from there and kind of thing. I think that's going to be by the end of the game, he might have a couple appearances, but he's not going to be up here for long periods of time.
All right. So you've got to get out pretty soon here to go catch the development camp scrimmage game. But before you go, can we get a quick couple of thoughts on maybe some of the players that you've seen at development camp who's been surprising you in either a positive light or a negative light? Any of the invites making a name for themselves, pushing for a contract? How's it look?
Yeah, for sure. I think that this year is kind of the first year where the Canucks have a depth of talent that aren't invites at the prospect camp. So it's kind of intriguing to see. You know, in previous years, they would have, you know, the Brock Besser and maybe Jared McCann and things like that. Where this year, you know, there's actually a list of players that are intriguing, which is a nice change. And it definitely increases the compete level of camp for sure. Some players that have stood out, like Pettersson and Dahlin and Besser, are basically in a league of their own. You can tell that they're the best players of this group, and you can tell that these three are going to be NHL talent for long periods of time. It just depends on, you know, how quickly the two Swedes come. But Besser should be there for good starting this year. and then Dahlin should be close behind, and then Pedersen close behind that. The intriguing player of the group, which I'm sure most people are now aware of, is Adam Gaudet. He had a really slow start to his NCAA career in the first half of his first year, and then took off in the second half of the year, and then just kept going for his second full year. Again, he looks like a player who's just, you know, you watch the group and you just see him play and you're like, this guy is better than everyone else out here. He has a nice calm coolness to his play, you know, kind of a pro approach to it. So he's definitely someone to keep an eye on. I don't know what his overall ceiling may be. He may ever only be a third line center, but he would be a really good third line center who kind of helps on the PK, helps on the power play, does everything. But there's definitely some, some intrigue to that player. Otherwise, Ole Ualevi is, again, another just step above everyone else. He thinks the game so well. He's so smart. His passes are so efficient. Another player that, like, is a step above. He's going to be an NHL player, just a matter of time, which with fifth overall pick, you obviously hope so. Out of the other group of defensemen that stood out to me specifically, Jack Rathbone, who the Canucks took with their fourth round pick this year. He is going to go back to high school hockey next year. So there's going to be a long development time for him, because then he's going to Harvard after that, and it could be another full 4 years after that. But he is just so smooth on his skates. He moves the puck extremely well. He's really small, but he does has the ability to kind of dip in and out of the players and get it properly into lanes and active stick. He just kind of has that skill set that's, although he's small, he seems to be able to overcome that size, and he's really smart. I'm really intrigued to see what he is, and I'm really excited to actually see him in this the scrimmage tonight, because, you know, high school hockey may be a bit of a blind spot for most of us. We can't really, unfortunately, watch that. Again, as we talked about Palmu, you guys are really excited about him. I am as well. He seems to just do everything really quickly and really well. He's going to be on a line with his Owen Sound attack teammate, Gadjevich. So I'm definitely intrigued to see how those two do in kind of their line up against the Pedersen, Dahlin, and Besser line. So it should be a really fun night. I mean, it is definitely intriguing to see the prospect pool, what it is now than compared to a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's a lot deeper. It's really exciting. I'm excited for Canucks fans. Rapid fire, a few more quick names at you. Just get a quick thought on them. A couple of free agents: Zach McEwen from the Q.
Yeah, he's a really big guy. He competes really hard. Like, even in practice at development camp, he was giving it his all. I'm not sure what his real offensive upside is there, but he went on an absolute tear right after the Canucks signed him in the latter parts of the season. And it definitely made me rethink of what kind of player he could be, because, you know, he was playing with Vitaly Abramov, and I think Abramov is going to be a really good player. So you don't know if Zach McEwen was just a beneficiary of playing with Abramov, but I think McEwen has the possibility of being that kind of bottom six winger who, you know, works really hard, you know, maybe puts up a few goals and a few points here. I'm really conflicted about him.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, no, I watched him play a lot in Gatineau last year, and he's a big player, and he every once in a while he shows flashes of hands, and then sometimes he makes some really questionable decisions.
I think if he continues to display the work ethic that he's shown since I've kind of focused more in on him, I think that's a very good sign for him. Obviously, like, you know, we look at numbers and things like that, but sometimes those intangibles of a guy just really wanting it, it's something that will push him further than his skill set will allow him to do so. And I think that because he has that bigger size and he can skate reasonably well for his size and he has pretty good hands, I think he can push himself into a position where he could be a depth player in the future.
Mm-hmm. Other free agent, Philip Holm.
Philip Holm actually isn't at the camp this year because of his older age. But I think for him, because of the signings that the Canucks made, he's probably going to be the ninth defenseman because he doesn't have to clear waivers. He can actually go down to Utica. I think that's where he'll start the year, but I think he'll be the first option for call-up going forward when injuries happen, because if you're in Vancouver, you're in a defenseman, you get injured. That's what happens. So I think it'll only be a matter of time till he comes in. I think he's a good low risk bet for a bottom pairing defenseman who can move the puck well and skates well. And you know, as we know, the game is kind of changing and he just plays the game that way. He may never have a huge offensive upside again, but, you know, I think he could carve himself out in an NHL career.
Is Andre Pedon the biggest successor or benefactor of Nikita Triamkin going to the KHL?
A couple weeks ago, yeah. But now since they've signed Weirconch and Michael Delzato, I think he might be the odd man out. The top seven is pretty locked up for the Canucks, and there's probably one more spot left over for Alex Bieger or Andre Pedan to kind of fight over. Personally, if I was in charge of the Canucks, I'd put Andre Pedan in there because he did extremely well in the AHL, not last year, but the year before. He just kind of seems to give them that physical element that they need and that they crave. So I think that he could make it. If he doesn't and gets waived, that might be all she wrote for his career, which would be unfortunate because I think he could be a good physical bottom pairing defenseman as well.
Last one for me, Jordan Subban. Running out of chances?
I think so. And I mentioned how Pedan or Hull might be the number nine. And then whoever falls out of the Biega, Pedan is right behind them. And then, you know, unfortunately, I think Jordan Subban is falling behind. He watched a lot of Utica games, and he does a lot of things really well, but he has a lot of trouble still in the defensive zone. I'm not sure how much of it is circumstantial, how much the Canucks are just not are too afraid of his risk, and if he was somewhere else, that another team might be willing to accept that risk and take the good with the bad. I think he's done in Vancouver, but he may get another opportunity somewhere else and be able to be that kind of power play quarterback. A team will just have to live with this lapses in the defensive zone.
I hope he does make it. He's a great guy. I interviewed him after a game in Belleville a few years ago, and right at the end of the game, he ran the goalie and broke his nose. And then after the game, he's talking to me. And he's got blood pouring out of the side of his nose. And I'm like, dude, go take care of that. Don't talk to me.
Yeah.
But he was like, no, it's cool, man. He just wiped it away and like, let's go. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think he's a really good kid, and I think he does a lot of things really well. It's just that the problem is that the things that when he makes a mistake, it's very, very, very noticeable, and it usually ends up in the back of the net. And so we'll see. He gets a fresh start with a new coach down in Utica, but the coach that he had in Utica is now the head coach in Vancouver. So I don't know how much Travis Green is willing to take that risk because he's obviously seen him now for two full years. I like him as a player. I would take the risk, but it's so circumstantial. Like I said, we don't know if he's going to be able to overcome the team's preconceived notions of him.
All right, and final one from me, Ryan. Guillaume Brisebois, a big fan of him from Charlottetown Islanders. How did he look in development camp?
I think he's kind of getting overshadowed by Olli Juolevi and Chatfield. Chatfield has been playing with Olli Juolevi quite a bit. I think Chatfield and Brisebois both play a similar game. I think Brisebois might have a bit more higher offensive upside. We've been talking a lot about Brisebois specifically because there's some of us who really like him and think that he's going to be destined for a decent NHL career, and then some of us who are a little bit more bullish on him. I think if you're going to look at Brisebois, he's going to probably make it as an NHL player because the Canucks are very high on him, and he does play fairly well. He moves the puck well. He has some good offensive upside. He's pretty good in his defensive zone kind of thing. But I think his ceiling will only ever be like a number five defenseman. Just kind of plays, 16, 17 minutes a game, doesn't put up a lot of points, but you're not being hurt by him being on the ice. He will graduate to Utica this year. He's done with the Q, so it'll be interesting. I think he'll have a big role with the Comets next year, and I'm excited to see where it goes. He could take that next step, and I could be proved wrong, and I'll be happily proved wrong.
Well, the Canucks have a lot of good B-grade prospects and a few A-grade prospects too. So the future is bright for Vancouver. Not the immediate future, but the not too distant future.
Yeah, no, we just need
a lot of potential.
We just need a Rasmus Dahlin or an Andrei Svechnikov, and we're good to go from there, right?
That's right. you gotta tank and time it well. You can't just finish last and draft Nail Yakupov first. You got to finish last and draft Connor McDavid.
Exactly. Yeah. And they've already lost the lottery twice, so they can't lose it three times, right?
They're due.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, it's great catching up with you. It was good seeing you in Chicago at the draft again, Ryan. Have a lot of fun at the scrimmage today. Nothing beats live hockey in early July. Yeah. So I'm jealous. Being in a cold rink would be a good place to be right now. So thanks for coming on the show, and we'll catch up with you soon, yeah?
Perfect. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's great to hear some in-depth thoughts on Canucks prospects by Ryan Beach from Canucks Army and co-host of GTD Pod. Thanks for joining us, Ryan. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Beach. That's B-I-E-C-H. We'll post those links to his website, podcast, and Twitter feed in our show notes on dauberprospects.com. We also can't forget to thank you, the listener, for tuning in as well. Please make sure to give us a follow on Twitter at DPR_show. You can also follow our personal accounts at Zwombag and at P. Harley. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.